Welcome to In the Loop, a New England Temperature Solutions podcast. In today's episode, Dom will be joined by Dan Bender, the Director of Sales for Control Concepts. With 42 plus years in the industry, Dan brings a wealth of knowledge to any conversation on SCR power control. Today, Dom and Dan will be discussing power factor and peak demand. Without further ado, here's Dom and Dan helping you get in the loop.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast today. With me today, I have Dan Bender. He's from Control Concepts. Dan, would you give us an introduction?
Sure. My name is Dan Bender, and I work for Control Concepts as the Director of Sales.
And a little bit about you, your family and you?
Yes. I'm married to my wife for 51 years.
Wow.
We have six children, four girls, two boys, and I am the grandfather of 10 and a half. We have expecting one in February.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And you, those 46 years, you started at Robicon?
Started at Robicon. I worked for Robicon for a number of years. Robicon was sold to Siemens, and when Siemens sold Robicon, they were no longer interested in the power control, power systems business, and I had the opportunity to go to work for Eurotherm.
Okay.
I worked for Eurotherm for a couple of years, and the opportunity came along to go to Advanced Energy, AEG, as it was known at the time.
And you came here with AEG trying to get me sell their product?
I was looking for a good rep organization.
Right. Which so I was.
That, we will give you that. So we're looking for somebody to represent in the New England territory.
Okay.
Yeah. And then In 2009, the economy downturned, and I had the opportunity to get on board with Control Concepts, and that's where I've been ever since.
Right. And then we met way back because you, Robicon, was a Barbara Coleman. Barbara Coleman used Robicon as part of their line, and then they eventually bought Robicon.
That is correct.
And then they sold them.
Yes.
That's how. Yeah. Okay. So today, we're here to talk about power quality, and we're going to kind of go over, you wrote a paper. Would you tell us a little bit about the paper that you wrote and where it's going to be presented and who's going to present it?
We did a paper for, we submitted an abstract. It was accepted by the Furnace North America, which will be in October, and Furnace North America sponsored by MTI, which is the Metal Treat Institute.
Okay. Yeah. And who's going to present it?
Our director, our new North American sales manager, Tony Bush, will be presenting the paper.
Awesome. Okay. And it's on power quality. And today we're going to, there's two things we're going to talk about. We have two episodes. And the first thing we're going to talk about is power factor. And the second one would be harmonics. Today we're going to spend our time on power factor. Mm-hmm. And why is there's so much interest today in these two things? What's different today?
Power factor and harmonics, both we would title under the term of power quality, is becoming more and more of an issue today as we start to see more electrification of industry. And from our standpoint, we're looking at from a furnace standpoint, furnaces that typically would be natural gas, a lot of people now are going towards changing that to electric-fired furnaces. And what's happening is people now have to be aware of some of the issues that are concerned with electric power.
Okay. And I remember 30 years ago, was it, that we converted everything from electric to gas?
Yes.
So now we need more business, so we'll convert it back to electricity. Is there anything like with deregulation or any factors involved with that?
Well, there's a couple things when you start looking at power quality from a standpoint of converting things to electric power. People have to be aware of issues that will be concerned with regards to the utility. Power quality, the first one that we'll be talking about is power factor. And in power factor, there are penalties. When a company is negotiating with the utility what your power levels are going to be, there are certain requirements that must be met to maintain that. And they put on a penalty. And typically a power factor penalty starts and comes into place whenever your power factor, it goes below a 0.9 power factor.
Okay, so this affects your electric bill.
It affects your electric bill. Yes, it does.
And can be significant. So
can be significant. Yes.
Okay, so for those of you who have your accountants telling you to we need to lower our power bill, we're going to talk today on how to maybe do that. Some of the impacts that we have on power factor and on harmonics. Okay. And you talk about PCC. We had to have an acronym in the presentation here. What is PCC?
PCC is point of common coupling. And a point of common coupling is where the utility ties into a facility. And that's where this is all metered. So the PCC point determines, you know, how much energy you're using and how you're using it. Okay. That's where the power factor will come into play.
Okay, power factor and the harmonics.
And
well,
harmonics,
right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's at the pole to maybe the main box in the building somewhere?
The best way to describe it is at the pole. You think of it from very simple terms, in your home, you know, where you connect to that utility outside at the pole.
Okay. But in reality, it's probably some box in the building?
Some box in the building somewhere.
In a closet that's locked.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start talking about the first one here, and that's power factor. Mm-hmm. What exactly is power factor?
Power factor is the difference between KVA and KW. KVA is the amount of energy that's available to you. KW, kilowatts, is the amount of energy that's actually used to do the work. Right? So when KW is less than what KVA is, that's where power factor comes in. So now you look at KVA over KW, which gives you a percentage. So for an example, if you have 100 kilovolt amps, KVA, available to you, and your working is only 80 kW, then the difference is you're only using 80% or a 0.8 power factor. And from a penalty standpoint, that's where the utility comes in. They will establish at a certain level, if your power factor is less than unity some point, as I said earlier, typically it's below 0.9, they will penalize you.
Okay, so you say I'm reserving table for 8, and you only bring 4 people in, and you got to pay something for the 4 seats that you didn't use.
That is
you
correct.
Actually had a better example, which we'll show here on the screen, about beer, right?
Yes. Yeah, if you take a look at it from a glass of beer, you have a 16-ounce glass.
Yep.
That has the capability of holding 16 ounces of beer. And when you pour the beer into the container, the mug, and you only have a part of it, and the top is foam, so you look at that and you say, well, I only have, out of that, I have 12 some ounces of beer, and I have another 4 ounces of foam. The difference is the foam is unused, but you still have to pay for it. That's where power factor comes in.
Okay. And you got to teach the bartender how to get it in the glass so there's
He's
more beer,
He's
got
to learn how
right?
to tilt it properly.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Or maybe it's bad beer. So how does one measure that, and how does one solve that problem?
Well, it's measured. There are instrumentations that is out there that will tell you what your power factor is. You can take a look at it, and as I said, you're looking at the KW versus the KVA. Utility looks at it at the point of common coupling, and they're looking at it from a total plant-wide things. So you don't look at that on an individual device itself, because power factor is a result of linear and nonlinear loads. A nonlinear load means that it is going to operate somewhere below that unity power factor. Mm-hmm. However, in a facility, it's a combination. So what's measured out at the pole is not the same as what may be measured at the actual individual device.
So it's a net result of all the 0.8s, the 0.5s, the 0.7s, all that. And that's what, and so what the pole sees. All right, so we talked about the type of products that are you called nonlinear. Why don't you describe first what you mean by a linear product?
Well, a linear product would be something like a constant resistive load that you might have. example would be if you have an electric oven in your home, that's a constant resistive load. It doesn't change resistance over time and temperature. Okay. But it's limited into the what temperature levels that you can go to. In industry, you're going to see some very high temperatures. And when you start getting above temperatures, roughly around 1,500 to 1,800 degrees, the type of material that you need for that element, it comes a little more exotic. Therefore, its resistance will change over time and temperature. And then when it's changing, now you're looking at you have a voltage, a line voltage of 480 volts, but as your resistance changes, the voltage at the load changes. So now you might be down 80 volts to 200 volts. So what happens is that in order to adapt for that, is you put in a transformer. So now you're controlling the power to the load as a transformer. A transformer is limited to amount of unidirectional voltage it can support. Therefore, you get into phase angle control. In phase angle control, you are now altering the sine wave. You no longer have a pure sine wave, you're chopping the sine wave. This would be similar in same things in other nonlinear loads, such as variable frequency drives, UPSs, DC charging supplies, and things of those nature. Those would all be considered nonlinear.
Okay, so the use of a phase angle fired SCR, where it's varying the voltage by changing the wave form, is problematic from a power factor point of view because you've got 100% potential. You're using 50%. Is that how?
That's a fair analogy.
Okay, so you're using half the glass, and also, you know, the next podcast we'll talk about harmonics. It creates harmonics as well. So. Are there any ways to get around that?
Well, there's various ways you can get around that. If you're looking at from a individual device, you can take an SCR power controller and you can set it up such that it will operate in a mode where if you look at it from a standpoint, when you first turn something on, if you're on into a nonlinear load or a transformer, you turn it on for a certain number of cycles. And then over time, you gradually increase it to where it's full on.
So that's soft start.
A soft start.
Got
yes.
it. Okay.
So you bring it on softly. Okay. And then when you're doing something like that, there's a mode which can be referred to as a zero cross fired SCR into a transformer. And what that enables you to do is it turns it on for the first half cycle comes on for a certain period, next half cycle, it keeps increasing over a certain time frame. At the end of that time frame, you now become, you're on full on. But since we're dealing with a variable resistive load, and we're dealing with an on-off period, the next, you're going to go and you turn on, the unit's going to be off for a certain number of cycles. Okay, when it comes back on, you don't know where you are in the sine wave. Therefore, you repeat that, gradually bringing it back up. What this enables you to do is to operate at a high power factor without going to complete phase angle control and chopping it and creating power factor problems and harmonics as well.
And the reason we need to phase angle fire the elements that change resistance is because we need current limiting. Right. It's the only way to limit current is to knock the voltage down if it thinks it's a dead short and it wants to go to a gazillion amps, right?
Right.
So by ramping up, we're actually stabilizing the temperature. And once we get to the resistance that is what it would be when it's hot, we then control it. We can control it 100%.
What you're doing, okay, is that, remember we talked about that resistance is variable. It changes over time and temperature. When you first turn on in a cold resistance, you can see a very low resistance, which is going to draw an extreme amount of current.
Right.
But it's only for a short time period. Right. As the element heats up, that resistance changes. Therefore, the current draw starts to go down. That's where current limit comes in. Right. It's going to limit the current and hold it till that element reaches equilibrium. Once it reaches equilibrium, then you can phase on fully on.
Got it. And it's the limiting of the current that's causing the voltage to be knocked down, which is the where the power factor gets messed up.
What you're doing then is that's where you start chopping the sine wave.
Right.
You're only turning on for only a small portion of right. that half cycle, okay. and that occurs in every half cycle.
Okay. All right. And are there any other causes out there? Is that pretty much it by just knocking, you know, messing with the waveform and creating, not using the full power of it? Is that
The main cause is okay. that what you're doing is that you're taking a pure sine wave and you're altering it.
Got it.
Okay. So when you alter it, that's where you're going to see the power factor starts to deteriorate because you're not in full conduction.
Got it. Okay. And then with that, we talked about peak demand.
Yes.
Right. So how does that come into play here? Because that affects the utility bill as well. As a matter of fact, maybe even worse.
It could, yes. Peak demand is, and once again, this will vary from utility to facility depending upon what it is. When a company negotiates a power contract, there are certain restrictions that they put in, and one of them is peak demand. And peak demand, you can look at it simply as that, what is the normal operating range that you will use? This certain amount of power level. You're saying you're going to use, and we'll just use simple numbers, you're saying you're going to use 100 kVA, okay? And that's what you consistently do. However, if you go above that point, what the power company is saying, if you exceed the level that you agreed to, mm-hmm. because of deregulation and some other things, they've got to go back out onto the grid, and now they're buying power at that time. And that could be substantially different. Be an example, you had an agreement where you're paying 13 cents a kilowatt. If you exceed that peak demand and they have to go out and buy power off the grid at that moment in time, it could be 20 cents. Therefore, somebody has to pay that difference. And so what happens is they're saying, this is what you're using. And therefore, for that negotiated time, and it's typically a month or two, you're going to pay that peak demand problem. So if you exceed it on day one of the month, you're going to pay that throughout that agreed time period, 1 month or 2 months.
Okay.
So when you've shut the furnaces all down for the weekend right. and you come in on Monday, you don't want to turn them all on full, as you're going to exceed that peak demand, and now your power bill is going to be reflected for the rest of that time period.
Okay, so you can eliminate some of it by staggering furnaces.
Yes.
Or ramping up, maybe?
Ramping up. Or you don't shut them down for the weekend.
Right.
So you just put them in a low mode to keep them, you know, functioning. So when you first turn them on, you're not going to exceed that level.
Okay. So, I mean, you could come back January 2nd, turn everything on, and your electric bill goes
through the roof. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're going to see, and this is when how we arrived at trying to do this, is because as we see the more inquiries and requirements of going to electrification, we have a limited grid. And now some of these right. problems are going to be amplified because of this. So when you're trying to do this, you come on peak demand, you may not even be able to get that. Because where is the grid and what is the power condition that's available? So you have to be concerned with it. Not only could it cost you more money on your bill, you may not be able to get it. You may not be there.
All right. If you can't get that, you can't get the temperature, and you can't get to certain temperatures, you can't make products.
So. Can't make product, and you're not shipping stuff out the door.
Okay. And the way to know whether this is going on or not is at the point of contact, the point of common coupling.
That's where all of this is measured. That's where the utility measures it. As I said earlier, a lot of people will get confused with this, and they'll think you have to maintain this at the individual device.
Right.
That's incorrect. Okay. You can't look at it from an individual device. You have to look at it from a plant-wide or maybe branch circuit-wide where you're going to do this. Take a look at that.
And is there any way to monitor peak demand, or what your demand is and what you're used to?
It's on your power bill. You look at your power bill.
After the fact. After it's too late, there's no proactive way that says no?
No.
Okay.
Unless you're monitoring on a daily basis all of this stuff, which could be complicating, could be expensive, and then who maintains it?
Like it's the meter spinning at 33 RPMs instead of 45. You remember what those were? 45.
45s.
Yeah. 33s. Yeah. Yeah. So we have our Andy. Do you know the 33?
Oh, of course.
And 33 and another. Yeah.
So they were a record,
a 72.
Right? Although they do have actually the Taylor Swift has records, right? So, okay, cool. And is there anything else that we should talk about on that subject that I missed?
As far as power factor?
Yeah, power factor, peak demand.
Well, power factor is, how do you correct for it, or can you correct for it?
Good.
Okay, there's a lot of things you can do. One of the we had mentioned earlier is how you fire into variable resistive loads. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if you have a poor power factor and you're paying for it, can you correct for it? And you can. There's things called power factor correction capacitors. You can put capacitors on the line to compensate for the poor power factor that you have. There are some downfalls whenever you put power factor correction capacitors. When you're doing that, you're correcting for power factor. Another issue, and it's interrelated and it's a topic for another time, is harmonics. When you correct for power factor, you don't necessarily do anything about harmonics, but harmonics can play an adverse effect in your power factor correction capacitors.
Right, we'll talk about that, but you said and blow up the capacitors and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else we can do?
You can try to use more linear loads. And again, I would have to strongly emphasize that, and that is you have to go back to the point of common coupling. Do you need to add something to correct for power factor? You may or you may not. You need to be able to look at that and determine what is the most logical and the most economic way of doing it. Putting in power factor correction capacitors may or may not solve your problem. Mm-hmm. The only way you're going to find that is you need to have a power quality study done by a reputable organization that can come in and tell you, this is where your power factor is. Here's some of the solutions that you can do to correct it.
Okay.
But highly recommend as an organization, company, that is what they do. They're power quality experts. They come in and they will monitor your system, and it will take days for them to make an evaluation and then give you a power quality report and tell you what are some of your options.
Okay, and unlike the harmonics, you're going to know about this right away because it's going to show up on your electric bill.
It's going to show up on your bill.
Right, we'll talk about how you find out in the harmonic world on the next episode, but
it can also show up if you have poor power factor. Okay, your total capacity that's coming into your plant. An example: if you have, let's say, you have 25 kVA that's available to you, that may not enable you to do 25 kW of work. So therefore, what you have coming into the facility could be different than what you're able to do.
Because of the nonlinear?
Nonlinear load. So now what you're limited, you're not going to be able to use all that's available because of how it is being used. You have wasted energy that goes through cables and bus work and so forth. That's where all of this is occurring. So in order to correct for that and for you to have better utilization of your power, you may need to correct for power factor.
And I would think, with the price of electricity the way it is, there's a return on investment if you have this issue pretty quick.
Yeah, because if you're not able to produce whatever you need to do, what simply mean? A furnace is not operating at temperature,
right. You're
not producing product, you're not shipping stuff out the door, right. You're not able to invoice and collect your money.
Correct. Okay. All right. Any other parting words for us before we end this?
No, and I've stressed it a couple of times, it is important, determining you have a problem and determining the correct way of going about addressing it. You need to understand it. This is can be very complicated, so therefore you need to get in touch with organizations that come in and do that power quality study for you.
All right, great. We want to thank you for spending time with us today with the podcast. Thank you, Dan. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free to call us. It's 1-800-848-NETS. Or if you've got this podcast on a social media platform, feel free to contact us via that. Thank you.
Thank you for getting in the loop with us. We hope this podcast was informative. And if you need any assistance on anything in the thermal process industry, please feel free to reach out to us at 800-848-NETS. That's 800-848-6387. Or visit our website at www.nets-inc.com to fill out a request for information form. If there are any topics regarding thermal processes that you would like to hear on a future podcast, please send us a comment. We hope you have an awesome day every day.